nobody knows the art world better than pioneering modern artist Walter Askin, who is a PCC alumnus. We don't have time for me to give you everything he's done in art. However, I can tell you that he's been creating contemporary paintings, sculpture, and prints for most of his life. He won an Outstanding Professor Award when he taught at Cal State LA. He has guest lectured in Greece and chaired arts organizations that have included the Arts Advisory Committee. And if you're lucky, you might see his work over at the Folk Tree Gallery, or you might get to go to the Norton Simon Museum. He's being displayed over there as well. And he has written a number of books. His most recent one pokes gentle fun at the art world. I'm going to have to take a deep breath to give you the full title of this new book by Walter Askin. It is called True Fictions, The Search for Ecstasy in the Rubble of Contemporary Culture, alas, being an aesthetic ramble to various points of view, including the amazing wonders of wobble vision. As you can tell, Walter Askin has a great sense of humor. We had the opportunity recently to talk about his new book and his art background. Walter, how did you come to write your book, True Fictions?
I keep notebooks constantly, and I write down ideas. I do depictions for works, and I also write short statements about artwork I've seen. And it finally all just came together.
I can't tell you that I understand it all, but I was having a lot of fun reading it. What I really like best, I think, at the beginning is where you say, art is serious play, and you say something like, the artist is a master mischief maker. So with that in mind, in what ways did you get into the most mischief when you wrote this book?
I did not intend to create havoc and mischief. I do everything for the joy of it. And so this work came from that, and the fact that I've served in lots of boards and been on lots of different committees and taught at a lot of institutions. And so all this experience is there, and I'm retired now from the regular life of the institution. And so I just decided I would do what I would like to do and put some of those ideas down and together.
There's a lot of joy and fun in the sketches you write. Let's look at some of that. My favorite is actually The Critic. Please tell me about what you base that on.
Well, I created a course. It's one of the first courses in the country in critical theory. And almost every university has one now. As a matter of fact, criticism and writing about art has become too predominant in my estimation. There should be more visualization and less characterization of things, less writing about things. Graduate students today almost inevitably have to write a statement about what they're about in their work. Well, the ideas are in the work, and if you have an analytical mind as a viewer, you should be able to discern what the emphasis is. What people say and what they do, particularly in art, are frequently at divergence. They are not the same thing. I had a group of artist friends write a statement about what they were doing, and then they sent me a postcard depiction of what they were doing, and I put it together in a publication for the LA Printmaking Society called The Modern Manifesto Match Game. And what happens is that you lay these postcards out, and then you try to match them with the statements, and then there are numbers on the back. And so you can find out if you actually did make a good match. And you can inevitably not do that. What people say and what they do are quite two distinct, different things.
What I'm getting from your work and from your book, and pretty much everything I've ever seen you draw, is a sense of fun, and you almost seem to be saying, just don't take life too seriously.
Well, that's only part of the way I would put it, because I do think that it is serious, and that humor quite frequently covers something that is deeply felt and deeply meant, and that the way to get to people, the way to transmit the ideas and feelings that you have, I think, is more successfully done with humor than it is by teaching, you know, didactically presenting an idea for people. This means you flesh the idea out a bit rather than just putting it down in a very strict kind of, this is what you should believe looking at my work sort of thing. But, you know, I'm co-director of the Visual Humor Project that was started at two international conferences at Chateau de la Bretèche in Brittany, France. And we had Spanish artists and French artists and American curators, American artists, and the head of the House of Humor and Satire in Gabrovol, Bulgaria, where they have an archive of about 80,000 items. And it was mostly political humor because of the situation in which they existed. That's the one way they could talk about the government without getting their heads taken off. But that produced a platform on which people could view humor and art. You know, gives them some clues as to how to get into it rather than just sloughing it off.
Please tell me also, I've noticed on your resume that you taught for 36 years at various colleges, and then you have a chapter in your book about teaching and getting art into students' minds.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I wrote a book called Wamsters and Foozlers, and it's subtitled Dips, Dorks, Dweebs, and Diplomas. And it's about all the things that happen in teaching. And teaching is a very important kind of activity, and it's done wrong in the visual arts so often that I thought I would make some fun of that as well and try to redirect people's attention. I always tried to teach my art class the way I create a work of art. So there's no fixed mode. I am an abstract expressionist, or I come out of abstract expressionist culture. And that's a place where you do not preconceive the work, but you discover the idea of the work in the act of creating the work. And so that's the way I felt it was important to teach, is that you just started to listen and look at what people were doing and follow the student as much as the student follows you. And then not to give a single response to the work or a single set of decisions that a student could make, but to give them a number of different responses, and then they have to make a decision about that. There's always a tendency, particularly when you're in a classroom with your peers, to want to do things that really look good. And if you do that, you tend to replicate your mastery. There's certain things you're good at, but sometimes you need to delve out into far distant reaches from that. You know, not to keep repeating that mastery.
To not do what you consider to be safe.
Yes, that's also true. Yeah, to take chances, and that's a part of the book as well. You know, just to venture out and test possibilities. Because visual arts are a language. And, you know, I've done sculpture, flat steel sculpture, bronze casted sculpture, wood sculpture, paintings in acrylic and watercolor and oil, prints in lithography and intaglio. And I didn't pick to do those things willy-nilly, but because different ideas can be said more succinctly and clearly in a different medium. The media, in a way, is a response to the ideas you develop as you're moving along.
What do you consider your own best lesson as an artist who's had a lot of success and a lot of acclaim in doing something that wasn't so safe and challenging yourself?
That's a hard question to pick one event, because it's really a series of events. And a lot of it's not just with your own work, it's with encountering the work of others. Now, the Pasadena Art Museum was very important to my development, probably even more important than the teachers at the City College, because you could look at the Blue Four there and experience the different ways that they approached the process of visualization. And that meant a lot to me as a student growing up, because I could go down there when I was in junior high school and look at things. And sometimes a person like Vincent Price would be there, and he'd come over and just talk with you and ask you about what you were doing. And that was pretty exciting. And also the Pasadena Library used to have lectures in the field of art. Man Ray came in and gave a talk there. And people attacked him because that was during a period when people were very fearful of communism. And they saw communism lurking behind every bush. And of course, Man Ray, coming from France, may have had communism. And a lot of the students at Pasadena City College were proto-communist. They dropped that after a while, but there was an interest in that. So people in the talk were attacking him. And he started out the whole talk by picking out the review of his show by the critic for the LA Times and refuting this criticism of his work step by step. And finally, the questions got fairly heated, and he answered them as he walked down the center aisle of the auditorium. And finally, the last question came, and Man Ray was not there any longer.
You have reviews of your new book by some pretty interesting characters. Would you tell me a little bit about that, please?
Well, I wrote the book, and then I thought, well, how are people going to take this work? And it's intended for the art audience, obviously, and the people who've been the most responsive to it are artists. And I have some wonderful reviews that people have written me in response to the book. But before those came to me, I wrote my own reviews of the book. I made up fictitious people and then wrote what they might hypothetically write about the book. And it turns out that they were all very laudatory. They all liked the book a lot.
So the one reviewer that you have inside the book that says he was, I guess, a judge of county fair pies and such does not review the book.
No, not at all. No. But I was just writing about the foibles of the art world, and there are a lot of those. You know, people tend to digress, and there's a sort of indulgence in digression. After all, the modern movement was a digression against what had occurred in the academy before, and we've kept digressing, even though the digressions don't always mean a whole lot. There's a certain vacuousness to be found in a lot of the things that people invent. Just because you can think of doing something that's different doesn't mean you should do something that's different. It needs to have some sort of feelings of belief behind it. And the critic for the New Yorker, Peter Sheldahl, well, I had him out to this critical theory class that I created to give a talk. Students were not impressed with him at all because he wore casual clothing. I'd given them his resume as an associate editor of one of the major New York art magazines. But he was talking in a recent review about the fact that art has become practice. And he was reviewing the current Whitney Biennale. And he said, it's just the things that people do. It doesn't necessarily have any meaning beyond practice. And his last sentence is, you know, when you die, death suspends practice.
If someone could get only one thing from your book, True Fictions, what would you really want them to take away from it, artist or non-artist?
Well, there are lots of things that people do that are at odds with what you'd like to see them do. And so that's why you do things yourself. But I would tell people just to enjoy these things as devilish delights. You can't just keep trying to make a corrective to what people have done. You just do your own work with positive ideas about what you believe in.
Walter, thank you for your time today.
You're most welcome.